How many downloads of Jim and Bill It's Another Day podcast?
Today, the podcast show has fetched 400 million downloads since its start, and an average of 350,000 downloads per episode, about 3.9 million downloads per week.
Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I am Bill Knight, getting my morning cup of coffee.
Have you seen the devastation from the flooding in Kentucky? I think 8 or 9 people have died so far because of it. Awful. Awful.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and now they're calling for frigid temperatures. So all of that water, not all, but it's going to be frozen. It's going to be a mess. You got to pray for those poor people in Kentucky. And hopefully, and you know, it's just another, the federal government will step in there big time because I thank God we have a guy who's, you know, proactive. He doesn't sit around and wonder what to do next. He'll do something to help those people out.
Well, yes, too bad. Yeah, because we would have had Kamala. She'd pull out a bottle of vermouth or something. Yeah. You know. But you know, there's all kinds of, you know, just it's not kind of off topic, but you know, you talk about the weather that's going on, the strange stuff. California is still in the news too with all the mudslides and everything. Now they got a couple of things going on now. Apparently, since the slides, there's now this natural slippage. You know, we always used to say California is going to slip into the ocean. Guess what
right.
It's doing?
It's slipping into the ocean.
Yeah, it's 4 inches every 8 weeks or something like that, or 8 days, I think it is. It's 8 days, 4 inches, and I'm going like, that
ain't good.
No, that's not good. And they had a couple of earthquakes right in the San Andreas Fault. Within hours of each other, pretty good size ones, and that was yesterday.
Yeah.
And the experts are going, this ain't good. And I'm sitting there going, this is a movie scenario. They burned, they flooded, the wind blew them all to hell, and now the ground is moving on them. I'm like going, might be time to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, so much going on in the world. You know that. Last week, J.D. Vance spoke in front of Europe, the European delegates, EU Union, and they didn't like his talk. The EU
because
he was very good and he was very honest, and he nailed what they did. And now Margaret Brennan is a leftist operative who works at CBS.
Mm-hmm.
She tried to nail Trump when he was running for election. Fortunately, he was up for the challenge. And yesterday, Marco Rubio was on Face the Nation with this lady. And, you know, she was talking, they were talking about the J.D. Vance speech. And Brennan, who obviously is not a student of history, tried to make it sound like democracy. He made these comments in a country where democracy failed the people, and well, I'll let you hear how it went. This is Marco Rubio talking to Margaret Brennan.
Well, he was standing in a country where free speech was weaponized to conduct a genocide, and he met with the head of a political party that has far right views and some historic ties to extreme groups. The context of that was changing the tone of it. And you know that the censorship
I have to disagree with you. Free speech was not used to conduct a genocide. The genocide was conducted by an authoritarian Nazi regime that happened to also be genocidal because they hated Jews and they hated minorities and they hated those that they had a list of people they hated, but primarily the Jews. There was no free speech in Nazi Germany. There was none. There was also no opposition in Nazi Germany. They were a sole and only party that governed that country. So that's not an accurate reflection of history. I also think it's wrong. Again, I go back to the point of his speech. Okay, the point of his speech was basically that there is an erosion in free speech and intolerance for opposing points of view within Europe, and that's of concern because that is eroding. That's not an erosion of your military capabilities. That's not an erosion of your economic standing. That's an erosion of the actual values that bind us together in this transatlantic union that everybody talks about. And I think allies and friends and partners that have worked together now for 80 years should be able to speak frankly to one another in open forums without being offended, insulted, or upset. And I spoke to foreign ministers from multiple countries throughout Europe. many of them probably didn't like the speech or didn't agree with it, but they were continuing to engage with us on all sorts of issues that unite us. So again, at the end of the day, I think that people give all, that is a form in which you're supposed to be inviting people to give speeches, not basically a chorus where everyone is saying the exact same thing. That's not always going to be the case when it's a collection of democracies where leaders have the right and the privilege to speak their minds in forums such as these.
Marco Rubio, boy, he nailed her. But she really sounded, in my opinion, Bill, like a numbskull, like somebody who truly didn't know history, didn't understand what Germany was like during World War II, what was behind the whole thing. There was nothing free about free speech and in Nazi Germany. You toed the line, or God forbid, let's just leave it at that, you know? This is somebody, and this is the problem, Bill, I see with a lot of these anchors and reporters nowadays, is they are not smart people. They are not the learned people that that used to sit in those chairs. I'm talking about, you go back to Edward R. Murrow, you go back to Walter Cronkite. They did their friggin' homework, you know?
Well, you've got journalists that they might have gone to journalism school, and they may have done well. So on the basic root of everything, they might be okay. But the problem is they've been indoctrinated into schools to where they are totally to the left leaning. So when they talk about democracy, they always talk about their democracy. When they talk about a constitutional crisis, it is their interpretation of the Constitution, because they never really took the time to learn it properly. They don't know what democracy is. They don't know what the Constitution is. They know what they have been spoon-fed, and not, you know, and they didn't take the time to sit there and make sure that what they were getting was right. They just assumed it was.
Honest to God, what I've also noticed is that, yeah, you can get a degree in journalism from a journalism school nowadays, and it doesn't take as much. It truly doesn't take as much effort. They have lowered the standards in these schools, and so some of these people kind of float by. They don't have the high standards that these things used to have, these schools used to have. So I don't know. You listen to Margaret Brennan talking. Boy, the other thing that gets me, Bill, is because she's the host of Face the Nation. She has this demeanor like, oh, I'm so smart. I'm amazing myself when I'm saying these things. That's the kind of attitude that she has. And Rubio just sat there, and I swear to God, he must have looked at her and thought, are you asking me this kind of a foolish question for real? I mean, he said, no, I have to disagree.
And he was smart, and he was right to do that. But even a lot of politicians today don't know, you know, the real, and that's the problem. You know, you forget where you came from. Yep. You know,
that's
then
true.
You don't know where you're going. So you can be, you know, you can be led by the nose astray, and that's what's going on with America. These journalists, you're right. You know, getting through school, it's like any course. If you got a kid that's going through college, you know, how do you do? I got an A. Oh, really? I didn't see you studying that much. Well, No. I found there's a website I can go to, and I can answer all the questions.
Yeah, and I got great AI. I mean, I got a subscription to a chat GPT, and it's doing my homework. It's great.
Yeah, and when I'm in the class, I'm allowed to bring my phone, and I can go right there and get the answer. I'm like going, I can see. You know, I can see where you got that grade. I mean,
the real art that they're learning right now is how to take a paragraph written by ChatGPT and kind of personalize it so it sounds like it's coming from you. That's the skill, is to massage the AI's paragraph, the AI's answer, so that it has a sound that may be coming from you. You know, it's sad because you're not getting the brains, you know, that we used to get coming out of universities. This goes back, Bill, to when I went back to college and got my degree. I was amazed. I took a math course, college-level math course, and I had been 35 years in broadcasting away from college.
You had to do some homework.
Well, I did, believe me, but not as much as you think, and I'll tell you why, because the math course required you to have a math calculator. And I thought to myself, wait a second, what good is it to learn the math formulas and stuff like that if you have the computer do it, you know? And the answer is, well, there is no, it's cheating. But the difference is that it's actually cheating that is encouraged by the university. You have to take this course and you have to get yourself a calculator. What good is that? It's like, you know, but listen, I didn't argue. I did exactly what they told me to do. And I bought the math calculator, and I got a B+ or something like that. I didn't get an A, which means I bought a stupid calculator. But that's besides
the yes. Well, you know, I took a calculator to class one time, and I got in trouble. Failed the test without even getting to take the test because I brought a calculator.
Well, they're flipped between the time you went to school and the time I went back.
I was ahead of my time.
Yes, you were. Hey, listen. Speaking of being ahead of our time, do you know that we have a coffee that's ahead of its time? It's Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. Most people don't know about it, but we want to get the word out there because it's just that good. It's a medium blend roast and a medium decaf roast. It's a delicious blend of coffee. It's worth trying, truly. And you're saying, well, Jim, I'd try, but I don't know where to get it. Well, I'll tell you. No, I won't tell you. Bill will tell you. Okay.
All you got to do is you can go to itsanotherday.com. You will see the link at the top. It says Right Side Shop. Or if you don't want to type in that many letters into the typewriter, just go rightsideshop.com. Just Right Side Shop ought to get you there, but rightsideshop.com, and it pops up with all the other merchandise that we have.
I think you call that swag, Bill.
Swag, baby, swag. Yeah. You want some swag? We got swag.
Most people call it swag, but I think swag has more of a je ne sais quoi sound to it, you know? I like what I speak
I don't know where I picked up swag. It was a long time ago. And there's a long story
Yeah, I'm sure there is, but we don't need to hear about it. Yeah, I know. Anyway, check it out. It's Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, and it's delicious. And not only that, but we've spared no expense. We went south of the border, and we shipped across the Rio Grande. I think it was did we use a life raft, or did they just run across a shallow part of it? Anyway, Juan, Jose, and the border crossers, they're here, and all they do is wait for the next opportunity to sing the jingle. So without any further ado, here's Juan, Jose, and the border crossers.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
Right Side Coffee, try it. Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. Bill, a lot of stuff happened over the weekend. Mike Waltz, who used to be a representative, I think, from Florida, he's now an advisor to the president, and he was on one of the talk shows with Shannon Bream over the weekend, and I got two parts to his answers. He gave us a lot of information about what's going on with regard to the peace talks and stuff like that in Doge, and well, listen to the first part.
The European leaders putting together what's being called an emergency summit in Paris tomorrow. They've been rattled by some of what they heard from members of the administration in Munich. They reportedly are not going to have a seat at the table for these opening talks with Russia about winding down that war. That's according to Special Envoy Keith Kellogg, former general. You said last week, though, Europe has to own this conflict moving forward. So why shouldn't the Europeans have a seat at the table at these conversations?
Shannon, let me tell you what we heard this week. We heard President Trump engage President Putin of Russia, immediately engage President Zelensky. And here's what both leaders had in common. Both of them said in those back-to-back calls that only President Trump could get them to the table. Only President Trump could drive peace. And, you know, this notion that our European allies haven't been engaged. President Trump also spoke with Macron this week. We have a visit with Prime Minister Starmer of the United Kingdom coming up. And we had no less than our Vice President, our Secretary of State, our Secretary of Defense, our Secretary of Treasury, who was in Kyiv personally, and our Special Envoy Kellogg, all in Europe this week, all engaging our allies. Now, Now, they may not like some of the sequencing that is going on in these negotiations, but I have to push back on this any notion that they aren't being consulted. They absolutely are. And, you know, at the end of the day, though, this is going to be under President Trump's leadership that we get this war to an end.
Okay, so there are talks about, you know, talks starting this week. You are reportedly part of that team that's going to be in Saudi Arabia talking with the Russians, but there are questions about Ukraine's role. Here's what Senator Adam Schiff says. The president's inability to even identify Ukraine as an equal bargaining power after all the blood Ukraine has shed, it's just a shocking surrender of American values and interests. Now, President Zelensky says he's not going to be bound by any deal that's negotiated between Russia and the U.S. Are the Ukrainians going to have a seat at the table for those talks this week?
Well, what Secretary Bessent, our Secretary of Treasury, was talking to Zelensky about, and then follow on with talks with Secretary Rubio and the Vice President, was entering into a partnership with the United States. We're talking about growing the pie for the Ukrainian economy, and I can't think of any better security guarantee than being co-invested with President Trump, with the American people going forward, and having those investments as a protection in of itself, number one. But number two, the American people deserve to be recouped, deserve to have some type of payback for the billions that they have invested in this war. And then further, Shannon, you know, I can't think of anything that would make the American people more comfortable with future investments than if we were able to be in a partnership and have the American people made whole. And I'll point out much of the European aid is actually in the form of a loan that is repaid. It's repaid with interest on Russian assets. So, you know, President Trump is rethinking the entire dynamic here. That has some people uncomfortable, but I think Zelensky would be very wise to enter into this agreement with the United States. There's no better way to secure them going forward. And further, there was a question of whether Putin would come to the table. He has now done so under President Trump's leadership, and we're going to continue those talks in the coming weeks at President Trump's direction.
You know, and for the Europeans to get involved in these peace talks would be a mistake, because you have too many people throwing too much, opinions into the mix. You want a clear message. You want clear conversation. And that's what Trump is saying. Trump is saying, look, it's me, Russia, and the Ukraine. You know, Zelensky was on with Kirsten Welker, and he sounded like he was, I'll let his answer to her speak for itself.
Thing that President Trump said this week, he did not say yes when he was asked if he sees Ukraine as an equal member in the peace process. He did say later that Ukraine would have a seat at the table. Have you been given any assurances that Ukraine will have an equal seat at the negotiating table?
So I will never accept any decisions between the United States and Russia about Ukraine. Never. And our people, never. And our adults and children and everybody. It can't be so. This is the war in Ukraine against us. And it's our human losses. We are thankful for all the support, unity between USA, in USA, around Ukraine support, bipartisan unity, bipartisan support. We are thankful for all of this. But there is no any leader in the world who can really make a deal with Putin without us, about us.
Okay, so what he's saying is he'll never accept just a decision made between the U.S. and Russia. And Kirsten Welker made it sound like Trump hadn't committed to that, Bill. But the fact of the matter, he did say that the Ukraine would be at the table. He did say that. She was soliciting an answer that would be controversial, as opposed to the, you know, a truthful answer, as far as I'm concerned.
But she was being intentionally deceitful.
Yeah, I think she was. I really do.
You know, with the Ukraine, you know, there's $350 billion. Probably over $350 billion we gave the Ukraine. I guess Trump thinks he's going to be able to work out a deal to where they pay that back. And I think it's in precious metals and minerals that they have there that we will get rights to them.
You're funny you should say that. Here's him talking about that.
Would you support Zelensky ceding territory or exchanging territory? territory in any agreement to end the war.
Well, he's going to have to do what he has to do, but, you know, his poll numbers aren't particularly great, to put it mildly. He's got a country where, you know, it's been savaged and attacked, and he's got an army that's been very, very brave, actually, despite the fact that, you know, we've given him, in my opinion, $350 billion. That's what the real number is. You don't hear that number. And Europe has given, in my opinion, $100 billion. And they've done it in the form of a loan. And I have a Secretary of Treasury right now who's actually quite brave. He's over in Ukraine on a train. And there's a lot of things happening around that train that aren't so good. And he's going there to get a document done where we're going to be assured that we're going to, in some form, get this money back, because we're putting up far more money than Europe, and Europe is in far more danger than we are. We have an ocean in between. Europe has nothing in between. So you know what they have in between? They have Ukraine in between. So wait a minute. So, as you know, Europe is putting up money, and they're getting it in the form of a loan. And the United States under Biden didn't do loans. They just handed money every time somebody walked in from Ukraine. They just handed them money foolishly. This should have never happened. It should have never started. And once it did, other things should have happened. Other things should have taken place. So we're getting security on our money. We're going to have it secured by, they have rare earth, and they have oil and gas, and they have a lot of other things, and we're asking for security in our money.
So does it mean you are not sending
any? They've agreed to it. Ukraine has agreed to it.
Does it mean you are not sending any more aid to Ukraine?
No, we are, but we want it secured, and the money is going to be secured.
You know, it's amazing to hear the press. They don't want to listen for the answer. They want to just keep talking. You know, if the answer is going in a truthful and honest direction, you can almost hear them trying to step on the answer so they can get what they want.
Yeah, they want to derail it. And, you know, I was realizing here that there's kind of a weird crisis that's going on. You know, you look at the inception of the country and when things happened. You know, the one thing that we had, you know, away from the European Union was big oceans to separate us. We were by ourselves, so we could gel and become the great nation that we are without the influence of others.
Right.
What's changed in that time? Well, you know, lots of cables underground so we can communicate, satellites, and all of a sudden we have this internet, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like some of their bad is trying to influence over, and I hate to sound like an isolationist, but you know, maybe, you know, some of this is not so good for the health and future of the country.
No, I agree. I think that there's something to be said for being more of an isolationist. I was thinking about the deal that Trump seems to be putting together. If he can make the Ukraine rely on us economically, meaning with some kind of a trade deal, purchasing of stuff or whatever, there's more of a reason for Russia not to invade if we have a business deal going on with the Ukrainians. Do you know what I'm saying? If we are actively
you're not mess with the money.
Right. And I think maybe Trump is probably going to work out some kind of a deal with the Russians too. If we are financially benefiting from trade from both of these countries, we might be able to damper their mood to get involved with more direct fighting with each other. Do you know what I'm saying? If they both have something to lose financially, maybe they'll think twice before they start firing rockets the next time.
Well, isn't that the beauty of his plan for the Gaza Strip, too? Because when you do that, you're taking land that has no value whatsoever.
Yep.
It's been blown up, torn up. It's, you know, I'd be afraid to walk the streets. There might be an undetonated mine.
Yep.
But, you know, he's talking about going in there, leveling it, cleaning the land, cleansing it, and then putting up nice buildings. And I mean, buildings that are going to allow you to sit there and make money with, you know, turn it into a travel destination. And I think that's a great thing. That's money for them, homes for them, an economy for them. And it's good for us, too.
You know, Bill, I saw somebody over the weekend say 30,000 unexploded devices in Gaza. I thought that was a terribly high figure myself. I think that was probably a mistake or a misquote. Maybe it's 3,000, but 30, nah, that would seem ridiculous. But we do know that there are a lot of unexploded missiles and grenades and stuff like that and artillery shells. And I was thinking, how do you get rid of that stuff? I mean, how do you send people in? Do they set off charges to get them to detonate? You know, there must be a way of doing that that I'm not aware of. You know, it's got to be terribly challenging, though. I'll tell you that much. There was more of that conversation with former Representative Mike Waltz and Shannon Breen. Listen.
Given the cost that the Ukrainian people have paid, why would they not have a direct seat at the table, especially if Zelensky says whatever you come up with, he's not going to feel bound by unless they're actively, directly part of these talks?
Well, look, the Ukrainian people have fought valiantly. They have seen entire cities destroyed. The United States and Europe has supported this effort, but the United States unquestionably has borne the brunt of that support over the years. But now President Trump is clear it needs to come to an end. And there are key tenets that will drive these negotiations. Number one, it has to be a permanent end to the war, not a temporary end to the war. Number two, this can't be ended on the battlefield. This has turned into a World War I style meat grinder of human beings. Number three, I talked about how the structure of our aid has to change. And then number four, we're talking about economic integration going forward as the best arbiter of peace. All of those things are key underpinnings. And in terms of long-term military security guarantees, those have to be European-led. And I have to tell you, Shannon, when a third of NATO members still are not contributing, a third are still not contributing the minimum they all committed to a decade ago, I think that leaves a lot of Americans questioning the level of their commitment to back the rhetoric that we're seeing.
Okay, I want to try to get to a couple of other hotspots. Before we leave this, though, can you confirm those talks are beginning this week in Saudi Arabia between the U.S. and Russia?
President Trump initiated those talks personally with President Putin, and we'll carry those talks going forward in the coming weeks. And he is ready to move quickly to end this conflict. And we will bring everyone together as appropriate. Absolutely.
Okay, so I want to get to Israel. Iran, obviously, the continued instigator in a lot of what comes to the shores of the people of Israel. President Trump told Brett Baer a few days back, he says he'd love to make a deal without bombing them. But that stands in contrast to this report coming from the Washington Post. It says Israel is likely to bomb Iranian nuclear facilities in the next few months. It goes on to say that part of this is based on U.S. intel. It says the military intelligence report in the Washington Post spelled out two potential strike options, each involving the U.S. providing support in the form of aerial refueling, as well as intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. It said those familiar with the document. So there are disagreements with about how much a strike could do to actually set this program back, whether it's weeks, months, years. But it would certainly increase tensions in that region. What would the U.S. involvement be in a strike? Can you speak to that report out of the Washington Post?
Shannon, I could speak to what the president has repeatedly said, and that is Iran can never have a nuclear weapon. That not only would be existential for Israel, I think it would be existential for the entire world because it could kick off a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. How we get there, I'm not going to get into the details of here, but the president has also expressed a willingness to take whatever action is necessary. All options are on the table, but also to talk to Iran as well if they want to give up their entire program and not play games as we've seen Iran do in the past in prior negotiations. So all options are on the table, but I'll promise you this. President Trump is absolutely serious, deadly serious, when he says Iran can never have a nuke, and certainly not on President Trump's watch. They are an irrational actor that we cannot allow to have their finger on the button.
Well, I'd like to get to China and so many other things that are on your plate at this moment. So please come back soon. Mike Waltz, great to have you.
All right. Thank you.
Former Representative Mike Waltz, now National Security Advisor to President Trump, with Shannon Bream on Fox News Sunday. I love how they use the word existential. For those of you who don't know the exact definition, because it's not used a lot, but it's used by diplomats all the time. It's relating to existence, meaning it's existential to the situation, meaning the our existence relies on certain things to happen, you know, or if something is set into play, for example, in Iran, like if they get a nuclear weapon, that may be existential to our existence. It may cause us not to exist anymore, you know, in the long run. It may lead to a chain of events. It's interesting. It's interesting to see all the different plates this guy is juggling. You know, and I think I mentioned, Bill, probably before we started the show, that you know Trump was talking in this impromptu press conference on Friday as he was getting on board the airplane to fly down to Florida, and they were trying to blame the egg situation. The egg situation on President Trump. It's only a short clip. Listen.
Prices have reached an all-time high. What's your
Which is what?
Egg prices have reached an all-time high.
Well, there's
high.
A clue. It was a long, before I ever got here, it was at an all-time. Remember, I've been here for 3 weeks. And when you saw the inflation numbers, I've been here for 3 weeks. I have had nothing to do with inflation. This was caused by Biden. I had 4 years of virtually no inflation. So I'm just taking over. But I'll tell you what, this country has made more progress in the last 3 weeks than it's made in the last 4 years. And we're respected again as a country. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And it's amazing. Again, it goes back to the fact that these reporters don't do their homework, or if they do, they don't want you to think that you do yours. Mm-hmm. Because she's actually asking about, oh, the inflation of the eggs, the prices of eggs have never been higher. Hey, well, that's not my fault, lady. You know, I've been here for 3 weeks. I think it's 28 days today, Bill. Four weeks today that he's been president. It seems like he's been president for a year already. He's done so much. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say this egg crisis is going to go on for a long time. They're talking about getting Canadian eggs, and I'm going like, you know, if you got a bird flu, pretty well, it crosses borders.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Are you kidding me? Are you lying to me? Yeah, you are lying to me. And, okay, let's say, I forget how long it is, but it's several weeks before, let's say that they're over this and they go, okay, we have the seeds to, you know, the donors or the eggs to sit there and grow new chicklings. Well, it takes them a while to grow up, a few months.
Yeah, actually, it takes them, I think they said 9 months, or as long as 18 months. I don't know how that, maybe 18 months would be back to the level they're at right now.
Yeah.
Takes
a while. that was my joke over the weekend, you know. Well, you know, should I have gotten her, you know, flowers or eggs, you know, because eggs were, you know, eggs, and they're only going to get more valuable. You might invest in a dozen eggs and hold on to them and sell them before they expire. Somebody will buy
them. I saw somebody say that the price of eggs now is like $8. Then I saw somebody in another news program say it was more like $5.50, you know, $5.50. But hey, whatever it is, it's not the dollar, you know, 89 a dozen. It was not too long ago. It's ridiculously high. That being said, I do have to tell you that eggs, you can have too many eggs. It's fattening. So maybe this is God's way of putting us on a diet, you know? Hey, look at you. Cut back on your egg consumption. But, you know, it will have an effect. It'll have an effect on noodles, on cake, you know, all these different things that we used to having that are made with eggs.
Mm-hmm.
But the egg shortage crisis, my goodness, whoever would have thought. Other things going on. Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Bill. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get it at all. As a matter of fact, that's a good way of saying it. He was on a Sunday morning program, ABC's This Week, and John Carl, who's not a fan of our president, who has never been a fan of our president, but at least in this back and forth, he was honest. He was talking about Trump's favorability ratings, and he listed them. And Hakeem Jeffries, he looked at the end at when he was asked to comment. He paused, and you'll hear the gap. It's because he was like a deer in headlights. He didn't know how to answer. Listen.
Donald Trump's favorability rating is actually higher than it ever was the first time around. Let me ask you, a recent poll by Marquette looked at several of the things that he has done or says that he is going to do, and 63% favor federal government's recognition of only two sexes, 60% favor deporting immigrants who entered the United States illegally, 60% favor expanding oil and gas production, 59% favor declaring an emergency at the southern border. Is there anything you are seeing that Trump is doing that you are in favor of, that you think is the right thing?
Let me say, as it relates to all of those issues, we're just at the beginning.
Oh, my God. He had nothing to say. I mean, Jonathan Carl just listed a bunch of different things, saying it's the highest he's ever been. People are very much behind the president right now. And Hakeem Jeffries didn't have an answer. Well, we're just at the beginning. What he was saying was we haven't got an answer to that, and we're still trying to figure out something that'll get some traction so we can bring this guy down. Whatever they're doing right now, Bill, is absolutely abysmal. They're singing in the streets. By the way, their singing is terrible. They are acting like it's the 1960s and they're trying to stop the Vietnam War. But when you think about it, what they're trying to stop is they're trying to stop the government from auditing itself and showing where all of the government waste is. And the people want to know where the waste is. I heard one of the anchors on Fox and Friends this morning as I was getting ready to do the show, and he was talking about how he was flying back from Florida yesterday. And he said that on the plane, he was surprised. Most of the people were talking about how they were amazed at how much money the government was wasting. They couldn't believe the amount of funds that were being blown by the government.
Everywhere I go, everything I hear, even in Lib country, everybody's talking about the waste that's going on out there, and they're pretty much pro-Trump. Even if they don't like Trump, they're pretty much pro-Trump, and they're in favor of him. But if you listen to the Democrats, you know, Trump is responsible for all things bad. He's responsible for predicted weather. He's responsible for earthquakes. If you got a bellyache because you ate the wrong foods, that's Trump's fault. And, you know, well, you saw the NASCAR thing yesterday where the opening round there, you know, somebody said, "Hey, Mr. Trump, what's the chances of you running the presidential limo around the track?" "I don't know. I'll get back to you on that." Next thing you know, here comes the limo with the Secret Service, you know, running around the thing, and then off it goes. I'm sitting there; those guys are going, "Damn, we got to run!" You know, but no, those guys are in shape. They're good guys. But he ran that, and then they got out of there. They had places to go. They knew there was rain. They said, "Well, we might only get about 9-10 laps in." They got 11. Then they got rain at 2:00. The Dems were real quick to say, "Well, that's the Trump's jinx." You know,
they can't find anything of substance to get him on, so they just grasping at straws, as they would say, and nothing is taking hold. I don't know, Bill. I think he's doing a good job. I do see online, I do see on social media, most people are giving him credit for what he's doing, but there are still some holdouts, people who just can't stand the guy, and they're trying to make it sound like he's doing something wrong. Either that or these are well-intentioned people who are just not doing their friggin' homework. You know,
there's a lot of people that aren't doing their homework, and the left is out there, you know, saying, "Oh yeah, it's the war of the billionaires on everybody." It's like, I'm sorry, but you know, go back and look at your history. In the previous 4 years, who was Biden coddled to? Well, the rich and the elite.
Yeah.
You know, and the only difference is with Biden, he didn't do anything for the American people. He did it for those rich elite, those donors, and anything that would help him and his personal and family finances. So,
yeah, I think that I don't know. I could be wrong, but I think this time around, we, you know, compared to the first 4 years, they were on his fanny from the get-go. I'm talking about the media. he didn't answer him quite. This time around, Trump is far more serious with his answers. He's not playing around. Mm-hmm. In his first term, he seemed to always have a joke or a line during his. This time around, it's like there's no kidding. And I think that picture, mm-hmm. Bill, do you see the picture at the doorway into the Oval Office of him? He had a large blow-up of his mugshot framed.
Right.
And it's where he's looking very determined and a bit angry and very serious into the camera. And that is a reflection, I think, of his whole administration this time around. No mm-hmm. jokes, you know.
Well, what was the Wyatt Earp movie where, I'm bringing I'm coming and I'm bringing hell with me?
Well, I got a feeling that Trump is probably doing just exactly that. A lot of these judges, district judges, I heard a lot of people talking who were in the know, who were saying they really haven't got a right to be doing what they're doing, these federal judges and the district level, stopping the president from doing certain things. It's a direct interference and a violation of their situation. They should realize they don't have the right to do that. But someone said, and this is so true, a lot of these judges are appointed, right? And they're not the smartest lawyers out there. They are not the brilliant minds. The brilliant minds still are in private practice for the most part, making lots of money. These guys, a lot of these federal judges are doofuses. But listen to this. A bombshell revelation, America First Legal has uncovered damning evidence that federal judge Jack McConnell, the Rhode Island judge who halted President Trump's temporary spending freeze, has been deeply entrenched in a taxpayer-funded nonprofit receiving over, listen to this, $128 million government funding during his tenure. That figure goes, I believe, to 2023, and he expects more money this year. Millions
more.
You got a
more. Bigger you got a bigger figure than me. I thought he was at 117, so 128.
Well, maybe the 128 million figure includes this year's money, the expected money for this year. But whatever it is, Bill, whether it's 117 million or 128 million, we're talking an incredible amount of money. And this is a guy who's interfering with the presidency right now. And at first blush, he should have recused himself. But he didn't.
Yeah, but see, he wants to get those payments. So the easiest thing to do is attack Trump's policy. And to him, it's his money. It's not your money because Joe gave it to him. It's his money.
What did he do? He put a halt to President Trump's temporary spending freeze.
Yeah, but his money.
It would have stopped him from getting paid.
Yeah, that's how I read it. I read the same story, and I'm going, okay,
isn't this a crime, Bill?
Yeah, it's a crime, but there's a lot of crimes going on out there. You heard about the AOC thing where, she wants, she doesn't want to. She's actually training illegal immigrants how to avoid ICE and avoid the police and
I think Tom Homan said that he's going after her. He's referred it to the Department of Justice.
Yeah, what do they call that? And she's impeding, so the impediment.
Yeah,
So he's asking if that is a federal crime.
Yeah.
So he's actually taking it to the powers that be, going, okay, is impediment a crime? If it is, this woman is going to jail.
Well, if you owned a convenience store, let's say on your block, and you heard some guys in your store talking about how they're going to rob a bank, right? And you told those people, well, you can't do it between the hours of 11 and 1 because the police will be parked out front of the building. If you warned them, if you protected the criminals from getting caught, they could accuse you. They could jail you for a crime. They could they could put you in jail for being involved with that whole thing. So why wouldn't they do that with AOC? See, the problem is in our situation, in our government, these officials have gotten off with stuff like this. Historically, they don't get penalized. By the way, these judges, getting back to Jack McConnell, I think he should go to jail. And when you see that he has all this money that he's involved with getting from the government, you know, and they say, well, it's an NGO that he's involved with, non-governmental organization. Well, does he get a check from it? Does McConnell get a check? Does his kids get a check from that? Does his, you know, how is he connected to this NGO?
You know, there's going to be a lot of people that get rooted out that have received money from this and or things like this, and it's not going to be pretty. And I, you know, if they have knowingly participated in a crime, they're thieves, and they should be held accountable. Now, as far as AOC goes, impeachment, if it's true, you know, what kind of, you want to arrest her and perp walk her? Yeah, you could do that too. But what I would do for her is I would say, well, you know, AOC, baby, here's the deal. You can't be pardoned. By the way, you're going to give up your elected seat, and you can never run in U.S. government again. You're done. You're over. You're finished. You can go and be an activist, whatever you want to do, but you are done in politics.
Well, I think that people have got to do more than just get kicked out of their position. I think they got to go to jail.
Well, I didn't say not to.
Yeah, no, I think people have got to start, these judges who are interfering. You know, I'd like to think that Trump figured this was going to happen, and he wants to see who they are. And so he's just making a list of all of these people who are, you know, dutifully jumping up out of their seat to interfere. You know, the system was never created. The government was never created to have local district judges be the ultimate defining a solution to a problem, to a government problem. The executive branch, the chief executive, he was the end all. Harry Truman used to have a plaque on his desk, "The buck stops here." That meant he was the final arbiter of any of the major decisions. You know, when they dropped a bomb on the Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they didn't ask a district judge to weigh in. You know, when they went to war in World War II, did they have a district judge say, is it a good idea? Do I have the authority? No, they didn't do that. You know, so why should these district judges all of a sudden think they have the right and the strength to stop the presidency, the executive branch? Forget who's sitting in the office. They didn't, by the way, do this with Biden. With Biden, they dutifully sat by and let him open up our border. All of the things that he did that were corrupt down on the southern border, how many federal judges weighed in and said, you know, you haven't got a right to do that, Mr. President, so you have to keep the border closed. They all shut their mouths. They didn't interfere. So when you see them all of a sudden being the arbiters now, it's because they are political operatives and not jurists. They truly aren't judges. They're corrupted political operatives.
They don't respect the sanctity of the office or Trump's power, but they did when they were in control. Even if they had an idiot at the helm, they would have let him press the button and put us into nuclear war. But I guarantee Russia could fire off the missiles and Trump would say, okay, we've got a counter launch. Let's launch. There would be a Democrat right there right away to file some paperwork. No, you can't do that. We have to do a stop and a stay on his order to fire back. And well, we would get blown off the map because of their pride.
The Supreme Court's going to have to weigh in and say enough of this. There's a level of authority that you have as a district judge or as a federal judge, U.S. judge, whatever. There's a level of authority. You can't step beyond it. You haven't got the right to, it's overreach. You haven't got the right, some guy in East Podunk, who's a judge somewhere, hasn't got a right to say to the president of the United States, you can't do that.
Well, I guess we're going to learn the colors of the Supreme Court, because Trump did file an emergency appeal in the Supreme Court. I think that was over, what was it, Hampton Dillinger, who...
Yeah, he fired, right?
Yeah, he fired, but that was a Biden appointee. You know, right there at the right hand.
I think
side
he's the head of the special counsel office.
Office of Special Counsel. Yeah.
Yep.
And so he filed an appeal over his firing. He just didn't accept the fact that, okay, you know, I was a Biden boy. And I'll still be a Biden boy, but I want to be a Biden boy under Trump. No, that's not going to work that way.
Yeah, you don't want to have a Biden special counsel be the head of special counsels, meaning everything that comes out of the special counsel's office that goes to the president would have to go through, be filtered through this guy. And so,
and probably the DNC.
Yes. So Trump said, no, you can't be there. I don't trust you. And so all of a sudden, this guy sued to keep his job. And he sued in front of a liberal, I think it was a Biden or Obama-appointed judge.
It was one of the two. But either way, you know, they sat there and said, no, he's got to be reinstated. And Trump said, hell no, we'll take it to the Supreme Court. This will be a defining moment, because if they let this guy come in.
They went to an appellate court, too. They went from that guy to an appellate court, three-man appellate court. And two out of the three appellate court judges were either Biden or Obama appointees. So it was another stacked deck. So they've said, okay, we're going to go to the Supreme Court. They asked for, what did you say, an emergency?
Well, that is what
meeting?
The
Yeah. They asked for an emergency.
So,
yeah.
Let's see how that goes, because, yeah, and this is, you know, but the Democrats have been stacking courts for a while. And it's just for this administration, because they knew sooner or later. They probably didn't think Trump, but they figured somebody would get in and they were going to oppose him. Maybe not have to do the fight that they're doing, but they wanted to be able to have the upper hand, because, you know, you're talking about that scenario where they want that one party system.
Yeah.
You know, they want the, and I think they're there to the point to where they're going, we don't need a Republican Party. We don't need an independent party. We don't need any party but the Democrats, because they're the only ones that know how to govern and rule, right? You know,
one of the things I think that Trump has realized that, look, at the media is not going to be on my side for anything, so I'm going to just flood the zone, keep them constantly off balance by coming up with important stuff every single day, swamp them with stuff so that they haven't got time to truly do a back check, because by the time they back check something, he's already moved on to something else. For example, he started the National Energy was it Defense Fund or something like that? Listen to this.
And here is an executive order establishing the National Energy Dominance Council. So that will be chaired by the Secretary of the Interior, Mr. Burgum, and the Vice Chair, Chris Wright. And so this will reduce costs with respect to energy, establish American independence with energy, and also unleash energy dominance.
Good, thank you. And this is a big deal. We have more energy than any other country, and now we're unleashing it, to put it nicely. And I'd like to ask, Doug, you're going to be heading it up. You and Chris, would you say a few words about it, please?
Yeah, absolutely, sir. Good afternoon. President Trump wisely understood that under the Biden administration, there was a war against American energy, and today that war officially has ended. President Trump on day one declared a national energy emergency, and this is a real emergency, because under the Biden administration restricted the production of oil and gas. Production's still coming, but when you stop holding leases, when you take 625 million acres of land out of ocean land, out of production possibilities through an executive order, you're really restricting the balance sheet of America. But today, as President Trump said, this is unleashed. The National Energy Dominance Council will be made up. All the folks that are standing beside me here, other cabinet leaders, and many more, represent President Trump's wise decision that we need a whole-of-government approach to unwind. The Biden administration had a whole-of-government approach that had the war against U.S. energy. Now we need to turn that around 180 degrees and unleash that potential. We've got to unleash it from the Gulf of America all the way up to Alaska. We have amazing resources in this country, and we haven't been getting a return on them. Many of these are under public lands. The interior has 500 million acres of surface, 700 million acres of subsurface minerals, critical minerals, and offshore close to 2 billion acres. And that balance sheet is the biggest balance sheet in the world, and it's been completely underutilized. Everybody knows we have $36 trillion in debt as a country, but no one knows how many hundreds of trillions of dollars of assets we have. And President Trump is asking us to go get a return on that investment for the American people. And with that, we're going to have prosperity at home with lower prices. And we're also going to have peace abroad, because the wars that we've been engaged in, or our allies have been fighting over the past few years, have been funded by the oil sales of our adversaries. So we have an opportunity, and we also are in an AI arms race with China. The only way we win that is with more electricity. And we also have an energy emergency in terms of electricity. Too much intermittent, unreliable, not enough baseload. We've been shutting down the baseload that we have. President Trump is going to reverse that, and it's going to allow us to win the AI arms race, which is the most important thing that we have to do relative to our future. So with that, I want to say again, thank you to President Trump, and I want to thank my fellow members of the Energy Council here.
You know, it's amazing. Biden drained our national energy fuel reserves. He drained them. And one of the first things Trump said was, I'm going to fill them right back up. Top priority, they're going to get filled to the brim. And what's interesting, Bill, is you know what Biden did? He stopped drilling for oil in the Gulf of Mexico.
That's the Gulf of America.
Yeah. So what did he do? So Trump said, okay, you can stop for the drilling of oil in the Gulf of Mexico. We're changing the name. That's why he changed the name. He said nothing in the order about drilling in the Gulf of America, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that was an easy workaround for President Trump.
But, you know, on the map, it actually makes sense that it's the Gulf of America. It never made sense, really, when you think about it, that it's the Gulf of Mexico, but that wasn't the reason. You're right that he's doing that. You know what today is?
What's today?
President's Day. And you know what that means? The liberals, they're doing their protest today. So
I mentioned that at the top of the show, Bill.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And yeah, they're doing their protest. It's not my President Day. So don't be surprised if they don't sit there. If you're out and about, I got to go out and do some errands today. And I'm going like, I hope the hell they don't get in my face.
I think that they can go out and you know, if they're one thing, the left, they are noisy. You know, they are out there. By the way, have you noticed, Bill, I was watching, I think I may have mentioned this over the weekend, coverage of these rallies they had in Washington where they were singing, the Democrats, and they were chanting, and all of these different politicians were pontificating on from the left. And I saw somebody do a wide shot on these rallies, and there must have been maybe 100 people standing around. But what the dutiful media does is they go out there with their cameras, and everything's a tight shot. Everything is showing the politicians, and you get the impression that there's a lot of people there, but there aren't. It's actually kind of embarrassing. You go across the street and do a wide shot, and there's nobody really paying attention to them.
When you control the narrative or the microphone and you control the camera, you control the optics and the narrative. You know, you can make it appear to be and say anything you want it to be if you're dishonest. And the media has proven itself. CBS got caught several times with Kamala and whatnot, that they were dishonest with their editing and their interviews and the questions. And you know what? The interview is over. Can we go back and do this question again? Yeah. And can you shorten your answer up, or can you do this answer? Oh, okay, I'll do that. And she does, you know, or she did. And,
you're absolutely correct. Representative Lisa McClain, she is, I think she's ahead of a Doge-type conference in the House. She was on Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo, and she was talking about Doge. Listen.
Congressman, I want to get your take on Doge, the latest incredible amount of money missing. $1.9 billion of HUD money was just recovered after being misplaced during the Biden administration to a broken process, they claim. But all of this wasteful spending, you know, sex change operations in Guatemala, et cetera, how did this happen?
It happens because nobody wanted, specifically, the Democrats didn't want us to see where the money was being spent. versus President Trump in this administration, this is probably the most transparent administration that we have ever seen. And that's why you see the Democrats losing their mind, because yeah. we're actually uncovering all of this waste, fraud, and abuse. And they're losing their minds. Why? Because we're uncovering it. And they're actually advocating for us to continue the wasteful spending. It's yeah. just disgraceful. And I can assure you, under this presidency with President Trump and House Republicans, we will not allow that to continue.
Meantime, 76% of government spending goes to mandatory programs and interest. Yeah. Interest, $1 trillion almost, and spending will total $89 trillion over the next decade. Tax revenue, $68 trillion. What are you going to do? Will you be forced to go into mandatory spending to come up with cuts to pay for the tax cuts? Yeah.
That's a great question, and there's a lot of fear-mongering right now that's going on. Listen, I believe that there are a lot of savings and efficiencies that we can find before we have to touch mandatory spending. But let's not confuse savings with cuts, and let's not confuse reforms with cuts. Our goal is to make sure that we give the money and the programs to the people who need it most. Sure. I'm hard pressed to believe that government runs so efficiently that there's not any savings that we can find. So at the end of the day, okay. we're going to get this done for the American people.
Representative Lisa McClain talking with Maria Bartiromo. Bill, I have to ask you a question. At some point, the Democrats have got to realize that they're whipping a dead horse. I mean, their whole approach right now is to defend not auditing the waste. The people, 60% of the people are saying, we love it. Keep doing the audit. At some point, the Democrats have got to realize, wait a second, we're on the wrong side of this argument, and we're heading toward a wall at a high speed. What do you think?
Well, I think the Democrats are stupid. They are all in on this extreme left agenda. So they're going to figure out every way they can to dance around and ignore and just keep going. They will bludgeon their head against the wall and sacrifice as many as they have to, even though they are in the minority.
Yeah.
You would have thought by now they would have woken up. If the party had any common sense, if anybody of that had any common sense was running the party, they would have said, okay, we are not going anywhere this way. So if we want to live to fight another day, we've got to conform this way to the consensus of the American public. But they're not doing that.
No.
They're just going further to the left. So their bullpen is all extremist.
And the thing is, they don't know anything else. You hear some Democrats saying, well, you know, actually, maybe we should rethink things. But then when they go in to vote, they all vote in lockstep. It's almost like they have stuff on each other, you know, and they can't, they almost blackmail these people to vote in unison. It's sad because there's no independent thought on the left anymore. It's like they just all raise their hand, you know.
It's ingrained in them. It's instilled. That is what they were born to do. You were born in a Democrat family. You were raised a Democrat. And you, at the end of the day, you go the Democrat way. That's it. You can't sit there and have a free mind to sit there and say, I'm in favor of this bill. No, this bill is not good, even though it comes from my party. It's not a good bill, but that one over there is a good bill. You know, and that's a true politician, you know, or a true patriot. They can sit there and take the best of both sides. And
you see where a majority of American voters say that they support limiting automatic birth rate citizenship to births where at least one parent is a U.S. citizen or a legal permanent resident. This is from Rasmussen Reports. And I agree with that.
I'm fine with that. You know, there's got to be an anchor. You know, there's got to be one anchor in that family that brings it here.
I agree. And I think most people agree with you. But the left is trying to sell you that if you come across, you're pregnant, and even if you're not, if you're here, here's the thing that gets me. The parents are here illegally, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, do they have the same rights as they're not supposed to be in this country. They've violated our laws to be here. Should we give that child automatic citizenship if they give birth in this country? I can't see that.
Yeah, and what benefits and rights do they get when the child is born here and has, you know, birthrights? Then let's say they get the birthrights. You know, what benefits do the parents get and access do they get?
Well, I mean, the kid is, they call them anchor babies for a reason. Because once the baby's born here and it's an American citizen, everybody around, all the whole family around that baby can stay. At least that's my understanding
of the law. Is it like that for every other country in the world?
No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the majority of other countries, especially in Europe, there's no such thing as anchor babies or a birthright citizenship. That's just the way it is.
Then we need to get on page and get on board. No, I agree that, you know, like, look, if one person is anchored here and you know, was born here, and he falls in love or she falls in love with somebody from somewhere else, and you know, that's a horse of a different color, you know. But then again, too, if she gives up her citizenship and goes somewhere else, or he does, you know, well, then, you know, you've got to weigh it and vet it. But at some point in time, you've got to sit there and protect the integrity. What we have.
Yeah. Well, speaking of integrity, let me talk about a cup of coffee that's got a great deal of integrity. Yes, you're saying, well, what kind of coffee are you talking about, Jim? I'm talking about Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. It's a delicious blend, a medium blend roasted coffee made from the finest coffee beans available. And also, by the way, we have a decaf version for people who can't have the high test. It's a great cup of coffee, and it's only available in our rightsideshop.com storefront. rightsideshop.com storefront. It's a great cup of coffee. You'll love it. You got to give it to your liberal friends and let them have the coffee and let them drink it and then tell them it's from a conservative company just to see how they feel afterwards. It'll be fun to watch them. Anyway, Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, available right now at rightsideshop.com. And by the way, we have our Juan Jose and the Border Crossers single. Singers here to sing.
sing their single.
Yeah. I got my tongue wrapped around my eye tooth and I couldn't see what I was saying. We have Juan Jose and the Border Crossers here to sing the jingle. That's what I wanted to say.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee. Anyway, it was a busy weekend, Bill. Lots going on. I think I heard they getting ready to send that spaceship up to rescue those stranded astronauts who were up there at the space station. I think they get.
Yeah,
ready
I think to... so. I you know, there's been a lot of I don't know. You know, those astronauts, you know, they I don't know if it's true or not. They didn't have any positive things to say about. You know,
well,
Trump or Elon.
Can you imagine if Kamala got into office, they'd be there for the rest of her term? I mean, they wouldn't get him down for maybe four more years. You know, they'd be talking about, my God, if Biden had more time, they'd never get back. So one of the first things that President Trump did was to say, I'm getting him down. And he talked to Elon, and Elon said, yeah, we'll get him down. And that's where they are. And I think is it this coming week, I think, Bill? I could be wrong. I'll have to check on that.
But. Yeah, I know they got to look for launch windows. I at least I think they still have to do that, you know, where things are lined up. But this is 2025, and we've been doing rockets in space for a long time. So, you know, it's going to get to the point in time to where they can just launch any day, any time, any when, who or how they want to, because
what I find interesting, such, Bill. They're trying to demonize Elon Musk, the leftist, one of the truly great innovators of our time. They're saying, well, he's got all these different kids. And hey, listen, I don't want to know about his personal life. If anybody can afford to have that kind of a personal life, it's him. I mean, each one of his children, I think he has, I want to say he has, is it nine children or something like that? But he has a lot of kids. And I would think that all of those kids will be taken care of with the finest schools, and you know, they'll be set for life. Let me just put it that way. Those kids will be, and he's also giving them. I looked at the little 4-year-old that he had with him in the Oval Office last week, and that kid was well mannered. he was for a four-year-old. I mean, he wasn't whining about being there, or he wasn't impatient. He was glad to be around his dad and was impressed by the surroundings. And I think his father felt, well, listen, this is a great opportunity for my kid to see history in the making. And he took the little guy to see it. I thought it was kind of neat. And
I would have done it if it were me and I had a kid that age. Yeah, I'd bring him along. Why not?
Yep.
Or her, you know?
Absolutely. So anyway, I think he's we're very lucky to have him, folks, working in our – and if they say, well, he's going into files of the IRS and he may see your tax. Folks, you don't know who sees your tax stuff. You don't know who's looking at your tax stuff. People right now – that shouldn't be looking at your tax stuff, probably in the IRS looking at it. I mean, it's just the way it is. When you fill out your tax stuff and you send it in, all bets are off. But I don't think Elon Musk cares about your tax information because he doesn't need your money. He's not looking to make another buck. He's looking to invest in the future, you know, and I think he figures a streamlined, efficient government is the way to do that. That's what he's doing this for. He's not getting a penny out of this, folks. He gets no salary. I'm amazed when I see these people on the left making these comments about, oh, he's looking to make some more money. No. He's the richest man in the world. I think he's worth $400 billion. Get a life. This guy is, he has more money than second world countries. You know? The guy's got a phenomenal amount of money. Anyway, my friend, is there anything you want to add to today's program that I didn't mention, or we did just
no,
about done?
No, as a matter of fact, I know the news is going to pop up today. The weekend's over, even though it's President's Day. Some people are back on the job, some people aren't, but it's going to be an interesting news week, I should say that.
Yep, I think you're absolutely correct. The president will be, he does it every day, something major happens, but... by the way, I was going to say, I was surprised that he had a deadline that was 12 noon on Saturday. He wanted them all back. Trump did. But I think he
got three.
He got three back, but I think he later said, look, I got to leave this to President Netanyahu because he's really on the front lines there. I do think he qualified it afterwards. But I think that the Palestinians, Hamas, knows that they're pushing the limit right now. You know,
I think that was purpose. Now, if it were me, if I were 100% to say, I would have sat there and said, that's it. Are you telling me you don't have any more? You know, because if not, you know, then all hell breaks loose now.
Yeah.
You know, you have more, you better get them here or all hell breaks loose. You know, but then again, you know, when he said that, it really is Netanyahu's call. We'll see.
You know, it's Israel's war. You know, we're an ally, but it's Israel's war. And if Israel says, "Please, Mr. President, don't interfere right now," it's a delicate tightrope we're walking here. Which is, I think, what happened. I think that the Israelis said, "We can't live with that deadline because we know we have at least 70 more hostages left, and we got to get them back."
What they should do is they should back off on their release of hostages. You know, say that deal was a bad deal. You release three, we might release three, and that is it. Or reverse the ratio. If you know, if they got a 5-to-1 ratio, well, you know, give them the equal balance because that would only be fair. And if Hamas doesn't like that, then you know where they stand.
Yep. Well, I do think that we're coming to a crossroads in Gaza, whether we know it or not. I don't think we can, at this rate, it's going to go on for what, another year and a half of releases?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there hasn't been.
That's stupid.
And there hasn't been a proof of life? Have we asked them for a proof of life? I want to see a video of the prisoners. I want to see how they're doing. I mean, the ones that you sent back look like they were in Auschwitz.
Yeah, but now to get the last round here, didn't we have to, we or Israel have to give them a bunch of, you know, bulldozers and tractors and whatnot? There was a ton of hardware that went over there, supposedly for rebuilding. Yeah, well, you know what? They have not done, you know, you know, nail one of rebuilding that place ever. They're going to do it now? I don't think so.
It is a mess, by the way. We talked about this earlier in the show, but Gaza has been absolutely decimated. I don't think there's an untouched building standing.
No, you got buildings that'll cave in on people and kill people. You've got ground that's tainted with probably unexploded warhead.
Yes,
that they, you know, you walk along, you and you step on something sideways, you might detonate a bomb that didn't go off yet.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see whether how this is going to develop over the week, I would think, because I can't see them continuing at this pace for any length of time. You know, they'll get all their prisoners back, and we'll still be short like 40 or 50 prisoners. You know, they're getting, what, 1,000, 1,200 prisoners, and we're getting 3?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, let's make sure people understand, you know, we have prisoners, meaning that they were caught in the act of doing something violent and wrong.
Right.
Hostages are everyday innocent people, could be you, could be me, captured for the intent of using you as a, number one, a human shield, number yep. two, as a bargaining chip. But you did nothing to be that bargaining chip, but you were born.
Here's what I think. Hamas knows that they can't get rid of all the hostages because they lose that shield you just talked about. And they need a shield. As long as they can say, hey, you can't bomb us, you may kill some of your hostages, it benefits them, you know? But so I don't know where this is going. At some point, I think you're gonna find that there's no more negotiations, there's no more exchange.
And, you know, the condition the hostages were coming back in, you got to wonder how much life they had left in them if they stayed in that environment. So, you know, you might, and this is going to sound mean, but you might be doing the hostages a favor by just saying, all right, talk's over. You know, because their life, as long as they are a hostage, is over. It's done.
I heard they're getting one piece of bread. This is what I heard. The
moldy bread.
One piece of bread, and they're living in darkness underground.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about... that's why these people are coming back. One guy was captured and he was overweight. And when he released him, like I said, he was emaciated. He was good, yeah. He was gaunt. This and you wonder how many people, Bill, have died from malnutrition.
Oh, a ton of them, I'm sure.
Anyway, my friend, I think we've just about done this program. It's been an interesting one. First day of the week, a lot of things going on. And we'll keep you up to date all week long. Please come back and be a part of our program. My friend, I have nothing more to add. It's all up to you.
Well, then there's only one thing left to do, and that's hasta la vista, baby. We're out of here.
This is CRN America.